Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. And we're going to start the show today by talking with the author of a book that profiles sports scientists helping athletes move better and avoiding injury. Let's not have the injury. Let's do things that we can do to not have it in the first place. Henry Abbott's our guest. He is the founder of True Hoop. It's a medical a media company focused on the NBA. Previously, he was the leader of ESPN's coverage of the NBA. And he is the author of the book Ballistic, The New Science of Injury-Free Performance. It's published just in May by W.W. Norton. And as we talk with Henry, I hope you'll join in. You want to know how to prevent injury while staying active? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Henry Abbott, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
It's an honor to be here. I used to live in Madison, and I've listened to a lot of WPR, so it's great to be on your show.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I tell you what, I really enjoyed your book, Ballistic. Well, it is a fascinating read. There's a lot of science involved in it, but you write it in such a way that any of us can understand it. And the stories you tell about the athletes are amazing. You start, though, I think I have a bunch of notes here from my reading of it. We aren't moving, and it's killing us.
It is outrageous. They have those little notes that would be like an ad for something on TV, and they'll say, consult with your doctor before starting an exercise program. And I was like, where's the doctor who says it's okay not to start an exercise program, right? The thing that I'm citing all the time is the World Health Organization. At the time I was writing the book, had a little report saying that inactivity was the globe's fourth leading cause of death. And immobility makes almost every disease worse, you know, all kinds of cancers and mental disease and all these things that are contributing to premature death are related to just being still.
Yeah. And you know, you've been a journalist, you've covered professional sports for 25 years. Talk about when you started thinking about career-ending injuries suffered by talented athletes.
Well, I'm going to say this, you know, I use this word with love, but I'm kind of a dork, right? I'm pretty into like evidence-based approaches to things. And I was covering the league, and the evidence was that NBA players were getting hurt all the time. At one point, I was in a meeting with an injury expert, and he said that the NBA has a 100% injury rate. Like, there's no Cal Ripken in this sport. Everybody gets hurt, right? And the longer you go without getting hurt, the closer you are to your next injury, basically, right? So right now, I think the reigning king there's a Knicks player, Mikal Bridges, who's gone maybe 6 years without an injury, but that's unusual, right? Usually everyone's getting hurt. So that seemed like a bummer. It seemed like it was this big force that was kind of wrecking everything that was fun about basketball. And at the same time, I was going through, like a lot of the listeners, I'm sure, my own little issues. And it seemed like we were all in the same boat. It seemed like these players and I were all seeking out the same, you know, yoga instructors, physical therapists, you know, that kind of underground network of just people who might have some magic for the soft tissue, solutions. And it just felt like way too big of a problem to have such a haphazard approach to.
Yeah. And you, there's one spot where you talk about the three horsemen of the free movement apocalypse: radiology, surgery, and pharma. Mm-hmm. I think he's something like who circle athletes like vultures, eager to feast.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the model. Is we run around, do whatever you want to do, however you want to do it, and then something starts hurting bad enough, and then you go see the three horsemen, and they don't care if you're going to move again, right? Like, they might get you back to work. They might get you back driving a car. But they don't care if your life is fun anymore. And I do care about that. I think it's fun to go for a bike ride. It's fun to go skiing. It's fun to, you know, move in these ways. It's important. It's fun to play in the waves with your kids, right? Like, this stuff matters. So I know that Wisconsin's kind of far from waves. I get that. Like, but,
well, but, you know, we've got Lake Mendota right here in Madison. And
are there waves, though? Yeah. Is waves a thing?
Well, kind of.
The wind is right.
Oh, man. Well, you know, your book's largely about Marcus Elliott, who is the coolest guy. Talk a little bit about Marcus Elliott.
He's one of one. You know, there aren't a lot of people like that guy. I spend a lot of time with him. And the first rule of spending time with him was I was not going to sit down and interview him. That's not how he works. He's not going to be sitting in a chair for 3 hours. I think I ended up interviewing him 44, 45 times, and each one was hours. But almost every single one of them was a massive, like 4,000 foot mountain climb on a bicycle or hiking up all in the hills above Santa Barbara. If you know Santa Barbara, there's a road called Gibraltar Road, which is sort of it used to be the kind of the most difficult climb of the Tour of California, the bike race. I reported this book, climbing that hill again and again and again, where I have my little questions strapped to the handlebars and he's wearing AirPods and I'm recording a voice memo of his answers. And so I have all these transcripts of me sounding like, and he's like, well, anyway, the thing about Harvard Medical School is just like totally unflapped. But he tore his ACL on his 17th birthday at football practice, and he just got super depressed about it. And his football dreams were dashed. And he resolved to spend the rest of his life doing what he's still doing now. He's approaching 60, just to figure out how to prevent the injuries that ruin sports. And it took him to Harvard Medical School and these top physiologists in South Africa he studied with, and he worked for the New England Patriots and the Seattle Mariners. And for the last 20 odd years, he's had this lab in Santa Barbara called P3, where 70% of the NBA has been assessed there, a whole bunch of Major League Baseball players and all athletes from every elite sport. And the trick is, rather than just running around and getting hurt, you get a million data points of this super detailed movement assessment of, you know, you move around for an hour, exploding right and left and up and down, and all the data goes on the servers. And then they say to you, you know, with the way that you move, Larry, you're at a little bit elevated risk for Achilles tear or lower back pain. And so let's move over a few yards. And it's a full service gym where really smart people are going to train you how to strengthen and add mobility to the things that are causing you elevated injury risk.
Yeah, there the his training areas, unlike sort of the typical training areas that you see with you know, the dumbbells and you know, a very closed in kind of thing. It's wide open.
Yeah, when he took over the Mariners training, they had, I mean, his line is that, you know, you couldn't take a long step in that building. They had so much equipment in there, right? And he's like, sport is about movement, but you couldn't move in there. And he said they had three different calf raise machines. So he got rid of almost everything. It almost looks like a dance floor, the P3 workout area. And people are doing big, explosive, free movements. The sort of crowning achievement thing I've seen NBA players do is they line up these tall, don't do this at home, by the way. This one is an elite move. But they would line up five very tall boxes in a row, those like plyometric boxes, some of which were, you know, 48 inches high, that kind of height. And then they just on 2 feet just bounce in a row over all of them without touching them. And it's the forces involved in that are massive, but they would train you to get ready to do that. And it's pretty awesome kind of free movement.
He became and is pretty good at looking at someone and watching them train a little bit and telling me, here's what's going to happen to you.
Yeah, yes, that's totally true. He doesn't like to talk about that because he's trying to be the Pied Piper of, we're going to move this to science and away from like these kind of guru model of, you know, like things happening in magical ways. So he would like to direct you to think, but the fact is he does have a crazy track record of, there's so many anecdotes. One of them is like a Utah Jazz player was there and they've been training him and training him to try to get at more mobility in his hips because that was adding to his injury risk. And Marcus, I don't know what he saw, but he's like, oh, well, it looks like maybe he has a deformed femoral head. Like the top of his like the bony part of the top of his leg can't move the way you want it to because it's bone on bone. I don't know. I can't conceive of how a human would know that. And then sure enough, they sent him for an MRI, and that's exactly what it was. There are a lot of stories like that. Yeah, it's weird.
It's strange. And there's one where he has them start on a box that's 18 mm-hmm. inches mm-hmm. high. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a ballistic part of it in a way, I guess.
So this is a standard part of the assessment. They would have. I've done it. My daughter's done it. NBA players have done it, where you stand on an 18-inch tall box, and you just step off, and then you land on with your right foot on one force plate and your left foot on another, and then you jump up as high as you can. And the information is coming from infrared cameras in the ceiling, sensors on your body, and the force plates in the floor, all of which are very sensitive instruments. And this particular move exposes a lot. And for instance, one of the big findings is that one NBA player landed with 11,000 newtons of force. It only takes 3,000 something newtons of force to fully sever a human spine. So what that tells us is we're blatantly counting on our legs to attenuate this force, right? Your ankles, knees, and hips are going to bend in unison. And then they can cope with 11,000 newtons of force, which is almost a car crash amount of force. But we can cope with it, which is amazing. But it can't cope with it if you use those joints in screwy ways. And that's what they're detecting is, for instance, I have the habit of when my ankles and knees bend, my hips don't join the party properly. So a lot of the force that would ideally go into my glutes go into my lower back and have caused me lower back pain. Other people have a common issue would be that you land on the outside of your foot and have the force roll to the inside, which in their giant database emerges as the number one movement associated with ACL tears in the knee, is this thing that no doctor knows about. One doctor knows about, I guess, where you know, it's from a big data set. There are all sorts of other things. Another thing they really notice is landing toes down is common.
Yeah,
but it leads to massive forces. So all the biggest forces, those 11,000 newtons I was talking about, come from people who land toes down, because after your toes land, then here comes your heel, which is bony and hard and pushing the force of your whole torso down into the ground, and it smacks the ground really hard. And those forces can do a lot of damage.
You can train somebody to land toes up?
They do it all the time. Yeah, yeah. It is. All these things are changeable. It literally is just in your brain. It's analogous and contiguous with the part of your brain that learns language. So just as you can learn to speak a little differently or speak another language, you can learn to move a little differently.
And just speaking of the brain, you get into the brain, or he gets into the brain a bit, which is sort of our central governor, I think he called mm-hmm. it. If you're mm-hmm. running, the brain knows how to make you stop on the one hand. If you're going to the point it's going to kill you, the brain can slow you down.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, the brain also, it makes a big difference of how fast you believe you mm-hmm. can run. Mm-hmm. Or how good you feel before you take your golf shot or your putt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there used to be this thing called the Harvard Fatigue Laboratory, where they had like a hot room and a cold room and a low altitude room, and they would just essentially abuse people by putting them through all these trials to see what they could deal with. This was back in like the 40s. Mm-hmm. And then they did a bit of research on soldiers for World War II, and like, you know, how hot can a soldier serve in North Africa before they're going to pass out, this kind of stuff. And what they found was there aren't really easily definable limits to humans. Like, we can deal with almost an infinite amount, but what stops you isn't physiology. It isn't like the capacity of your blood flow or your muscle tissue. It's your brain. And so what that means is if you want to get better at, you know, well, I'm in the Northeast today where the topic would be coping with heat, right? That's what we're dealing with. But if you want to get better at coping with heat, the thing that you're working against isn't so much your body's absolute physical limits. It's your brain having the firing up the central governor and sending the shutdown signals to you. So effectively, a lot of modern athletic training is not so much designing to get your muscles stronger or your VO2 max bigger, but instead to get your brain to back off when it wants to send a little panic signal for you to shut down. Because they've done a lot of research. Let's say two runners finish a marathon in within like a few seconds of each other, the physiological attacks is identical, but one of them just had a brain that let them go a little faster, right? So you want to do the kind of training where you're going to calm your brain down. And there's lots of ways to do this. Sprinting, lifting heavy weights, they kind of have this effect of like, look, brain, I'm showing you how strong I am. You know, like, trust me next time.
and the feel part of it, too, it was interesting to me. There's a golf course I play once in a while. And I, the first time I played it, I came to this hole, and you're hitting across a gorge to a fairly narrow spot with trees on both sides of that spot.
Sounds beautiful.
It is. And the first time I played it, I was feeling pretty good. Oh, I can make this. And I'm not normally that good a shot, but I made it. And, you know, every time I played that hole, I have made that course. I've made that shot, even though two shots later I might be spraying it somewhere. But I know I can make that shot, and I make it. I make it every single time because I just have that feel. I know I can do it.
Well, what you're not doing is panicking, right?
Right.
You're. The trick to most of these things is to behave just like, so if there's a gorge, the trick is to behave like there isn't a gorge, right? Like just swing it the way you swing it all the time, right? We don't need special gorge effort. We just need how Larry swings is the way you want to swing it, right? And it's your brain that will freak out sometimes. And so I think there's like, this is why they have athletes do things like get in the cryotherapy chamber or in the ice bath or these things that could inspire panic, but where you're actually totally fine, right? And the whole trick is just to be like, you know what? I'm okay. I can handle this. It feels a little uncomfortable. It's a little panicky. You know, there's a gorge, but I got it. I've been doing this my whole life, right? I think that's kind of the message of a lot of this, is your body can deal with a lot more than you think it can.
Henry Abbott, our guest today, his book, a fascinating book and entertaining as well. It's titled Ballistic. The subtitle, The New Science of Injury-Free Athletic Performance. Questions or comments for him, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News, talking with Henry Abbott about his book, Ballistic, The New Science of Injury-Free Athletic Performance. And again, join in 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. Well, Marcus Elliott says baseball is definitely the dumbest sport. And explain why he said that. He gave an interesting talk.
Things have changed a little. Honestly, they've had more experience with baseball since the book came out and since I finished writing the book. And so he would like to revise that slightly now to baseball's like coming around. But you know, he has this career of trying to convince people to change their habits. And that's hard to do, right? Including especially people who have jobs. So when he worked for the Mariners, you know, there are people who have jobs to keep the players fit. And Marcus is coming in with all of his data and all of his studies and all of his insight from Harvard Medical School. And he's young and brash and he wants to change things, right? Because he doesn't like the way it's going. But he ends up with all these, you know, a lot of people who are just super unhappy with his message. There's a particular anecdote of there was a high-paid pitcher who'd had a bunch of injuries. And as Marcus remembers it, that pitcher was with the athletic trainer and doing his third chest workout of the week. So, you know, he's just really super working on his chest, which is kind of a macho old school weightlifting thing to do. And Marcus can see these things that no one else can see, where basically he's like, look, his chest is so overdeveloped that it's pulling on the shoulder that he injured, and it's going to make it worse. And so Marcus is hoping that they'll change his routine to be more varied. And so he, you know, marches over there and says, hey, you guys, I think this is like a little too much chest workout. And then the players, like, basically the player said, I don't like people who try to figure things out. And I think somewhere in there is why he said baseball is the dumbest sport.
He calls it a rotational sport.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thing. A lot of P3's findings are that rotating is something we should all be practicing more. By that, I mean like actually turning your body. And the workouts I do that they assign me have a surprising amount of rotating. And the thing that really blows my mind is, and this is not true in basketball, and it's not true in football, it's not true in soccer, but in baseball, everybody who plays high-level professional baseball played before the age of 12. And Marcus's theory is that if you don't get the neurological development to be a very good rotator, which is biomechanically very complex, a lot of ways it can go wrong or be inefficient, but that's when you're throwing and hitting, you're rotating your core. And his idea is if you don't grow up practicing that, you'll never get good enough to make the majors.
Yeah. Well, and the training that was going on, having pitchers, for example, run sprints and so forth. No.
Yeah, that's a big battle. Yeah. Yeah. So Marcus was invited to speak at the baseball winter meetings to the athletic trainers of baseball. And his big mess. And so this is, I mean, he didn't have to do it this way, but he said, hey, who in the room has their players do what they call a flush run? So this is where pitchers will have a big, you know, throw 100 pitches on Tuesday night. And then Wednesday, the tradition of baseball would be you'd send that guy to do like a 3 or 4 or 5 mile run to flush the lactic acid out of his system. So Marcus had them do a show of hands. And everybody raised their hand. And then he explained how stupid they were. And I could go into it more if you want, but yeah. The idea is basically it actually makes it worse. And that's how that was kind of his intro to baseball. So you can see why, you know, it wasn't like a match made in heaven.
Well, and the rotation, you know, it's kind of interesting. We've got a new pitcher, Milwaukee Brewers have a new pitcher. Just Jacob Mizorowski, you may have heard about him. His first 11 innings of pitching as a pro were no hitters.
Oh, wow. Nice job, Jacob.
So, he pitched 5 innings of no-hit ball, and then he pitched 6 innings of no-hit ball. But I saw a little film of him working out, and his... I was looking at what he was doing, and I thought, those are the rotational things that
oh, totally.
Marcus was talking about. The kinds of exercises and things he were doing was quite a bit different than anything I'd seen in other pitchers. Well, it's pretty cool. Let's talk about the first professional athlete he had was a volleyball player.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love this story. So there's this moment of beach volleyball where they were just starting to get televised and the league was trying to do everything they could to make money for the first time. This was, I wish I remembered the year. I want to say it was in the 90s.
Yeah.
And the guy who was actually the commissioner of the league was Shaquille O'Neal's agent, interestingly enough. But, so they're anyway that at that time they're getting big. What one of the biggest, most important players in the league dumped his teammate, their teams of two, to join with another team whose teammate was injured, which meant there were two professional beach volleyball players who in the middle of the season didn't have teammates. And so they called themselves the Dumpies and they joined together. But one of them was super injured. His name is Dax Holdren. And some doctors told me he was never going to play again. But Dax found Marcus. And Marcus was putting him through all sorts of crazy different trainings. And Dax started to feel like he was getting better. And it's all like in the middle of the season when they're trying to play every weekend, travel around. And so Dax convinced his new partner, whose name is Stein Metzger, to come train with Marcus. And Stein, who I interviewed, was like a great guy. He's the head volleyball coach at Texas now. But Stein did not want to train with Marcus, did not want to go to Santa Barbara. He had his own routine. He was doing very well. And then he found, when he got there, Marcus that time was running P3 out of the back of a friend's physical therapy lab. And Stein was like, this is just the most Mickey Mouse kind of silly thing ever. And long story short, the Dumpies made the Olympics. Like, they only had a few weeks left of the season, but they played so well. They changed position. They trained differently. They got over the injuries, and they beat the teammates who had dumped them, and off to the races.
I love that. You cite some research that a simple prevention program cut ACL injuries by 64%. I know a lot of people listening have had, raising my own hand here, have had ACL injuries. How do we prevent tearing ours?
It's funny. It's this terrible epidemic, especially in women's sports, you know, where I think women athletes are about 8 times more likely to have ACL tear. And yet there have been prevention programs around for decades that are highly effective. There's actually, I got that 64% number from a white paper that was basically saying, when the science is so good, this is one of the best interventions we know about. Like, the problem isn't how do we prevent ACL injuries, it's how do we make these programs popular. And that is running along this track of, you know, people have been trying to prevent ACL injuries in soccer players and such for a long time. At the same time, P3 is doing their own independent studying of what causes ACL tears. And they're landing at a very similar place as these programs, which is basically, it's about how we land. It's about how your foot hits the ground. It's about the muscles in your lower leg. And it's about what your hips do when you land. Of P3's leading factors contributing to catastrophic knee injuries, which are predominantly ACL tear, none of those factors are in the knee. It's not about how your knee moves or how strong your knee is. It's about your foot and your hip. All of the big causes come from there. So these programs that exist are essentially teaching people how to land, which ends up solving the problems P3 says are the cause, where you have weak muscles in your lower leg, or you land on the outside of your foot, or your hips don't bend as you land. There's all sorts of different causes of ACL tear. One of the big ones is, this is kind of gross, but your femur, your upper leg bone. Some people have their femur rotate as they land, which is like twisting the drumstick off the turkey, right? It tears the ACL by rotating. You can fix that. There are muscles in your hip that you can strengthen that will hold your femur from rotating. Anyway, so these kinds of things are trainable if we train how to land. There are programs that are commonly available. It's somewhat common in women's soccer to do them now, but it probably should be more of us. All of us maybe should do these programs to learn how to land.
You talk about players who spend hours stretching and strengthening their core, but it has nothing to do with the core. The cores are typically perfectly strong and flexible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is one of the earliest P3 findings in studying NBA players, was that some of them don't, a third of them don't use their hips properly when landing. So the ankles bend, the knees bend, then the glutes don't bend. And so then you can see, you know, a lot of times they just keep saying, like, what we do is high school physics, it's super basic. You can see the force that would go into the hips instead just goes up into the lower back. And indeed, once they started digging into the numbers, players who have this habit of not bending their hips when they land are 300% more likely to miss games owing to lower back pain. This, by the way, is also what I do. They call these people blenders. And so this is an absolutely novel discovery of what causes lower back pain. And, you know, our doctors and physical therapists aren't thinking about this, aren't screening for it. And so what happens if you have lower back pain is they generally just try to get you to strengthen and stretch your core. But that's not, if you keep landing like this when you jog or even, you know, walk down the stairs, then you're going to keep putting these forces that should be going into your glutes, into your lower back, and you're going to keep making it worse. So there's this kind of biomechanical cause from your hips for lower back pain that they keep studying it in different populations, and it keeps being the same. It's about a third of people meet this criteria, and you can fix it.
Steven Stoughton has a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good morning, and thank you for the conversation. I'm 67, pretty athletic. I still play soccer. I'm going to be doing a major through hike in September of the John Muir Trail. And I was just thinking, I've already learned a few things from the conversation, which is great. So now I'm going to read the book. But my question is, how does footwear play into athletic, injury-free athletic performance? And, you know, what kind of technologies are current that help out as far as footwear goes?
And you, Henry, you spend some time, a bit of time on footwear.
That was kind of a setup. I feel like maybe Steve's like a, is Steve your friend, Larry?
No.
Thank you, Steve, for the question. Yeah, there's a whole chapter on footwear, and the answer is that in Marcus's view, the footwear companies, they spend a fair amount of money on research and development, but not on injury prevention in research and development. And so they, P3 has partnerships with various different shoe companies, but they have not yet really opened the book on, you know, having one athlete wear several different shoes with several different components and see how that affects their biomechanics, which to Marcus would be upstream from really using shoes to reduce injuries. And there is a study, there's a lower extremity review research showing that basically athletic shoes have never been shown to reduce injuries. So we're a little bit in the dark on shoes. I think in the meantime, I'll tell you a couple of things. One, Marcus is very livid that standard athletic shoes have a 10 millimeter drop from heel to toe. That encourages you to land toes down, which you probably heard me say earlier, like, you know, increases the forces you impact the ground with because your toes hit and then your heel hits and it's a bony impact. So we're all different. We have different shoes, different needs in shoes. Some people might need that kind of support, but I think that one that feels most comfortable to you when you try on lots of shoes in the shoe store, which you can't do when you buy them online, is probably helpful. And mostly I think the idea is that shoes won't save us. The little bit of rubber underneath you is fairly insignificant in cushioning the forces of falling. And really you want to have the musculature of your hip and lower leg be what absorbs most of the forces. You hike the John Muir Trail, which I'm super jealous of. yeah, that sounds like they're really fun.
Oh yeah. And you did get into Nike with their carbon plates and so forth, for runners, long distance runners. And
yeah, there's a crazy thing. So some athletes, like elite athletes, every elite runner is good and efficient at landing. So if you can take the force of landing, so this is like this kind of crashing down, all the weight of your body is going to free fall into the ground and running. If you have good biomechanics and good musculature, then you can cope with that. And so then a carbon plate shoe, which Marcus maybe kind of invented. They had a starter shoe company called Ampla. You can look it up. There's a vivid description in the book of how we got here, but this was before any of the major shoe companies had carbon plates and anything. And Marcus was like, you know, the best athletes use the force of landing. And if you increase the impact, what happens is you stretch the rubber bands of your calves and your quads and your glutes even more. So it springs you even more into the next step. So a carbon plate shoe is great for people who are primarily concerned about being fast and have a body that's ready to land with even harder landings. It's not great for people who aren't ready to cope with landing. So it's a little bit of, you have to know your biomechanics to know if this is good for you or not. And Marcus kind of, I think unwittingly in some cases, and wittingly, he's been a forerunner of a lot of innovations in shoes. And I think that's kind of continuing, to be honest. But yeah, this carbon plate thing is great if you're good at landing, is the main point.
And somebody else wants to know, are the sports medicine principles that Marcus Elliott championed catching on?
Yes. I'm not as fast as he would like, but, you know, I mentioned 70% of the NBA has been assessed by P3, and there was a league-wide deal in the NBA to install the kind of assessment equipment that they use in, at every team, and then have the data go a bunch of places, but including P3, so they can assess. I think the habit has been to keep control. So what happens is a lot of teams have purchased the equipment that P3 has, and they've hired a staffer to run it, but they keep all the data on their own servers. They don't want to share it.
Yeah.
Downside of that is, you know, you don't know what's dangerous unless you have a huge data set. You need 1,000 NBA players to say, oh, well, when this guy moves, like I mentioned that femoral rotation thing, right? Yeah. Like how much femoral rotation is okay? Like, well, you have to see over decades who tears their ACL and who doesn't to have an answer to that. So we've had this problem where the teams will have their own private, closely held information on a very small number of players, not enough to even draw conclusions. So it's just coming around now that they'll start to pool all that data. They can anonymize it and just everyone can start learning what works and what doesn't.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. You talked about the secret of aging gracefully right at the end of the book, which I thought, just to conclude here, which is essentially figure out which things are like dunking a basketball, which you probably shouldn't do anymore.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Marcus's point is fight like hell for the things that you can keep, that you want to keep, that are important. Like hit top of that list would be hip mobility, hip stability. You know, these are things that we lose with each passing year unless you fight to keep them, right? So you can literally measure how much range of motion you have in your hips or how stable your hips are with the, you know, basically how strong they are. So you want to fight like hell for those things, which you can do. But he has a story of like some super wealthy client who's in the 60s and proudly hammer dunking. And he's like, look, you just, your body doesn't, there's so many parts of your body that could break every time you land from that dunk. That, let that one go, right? You want to be graceful in giving that up, right? But we all have different things that are important to us. You know, I want to play with my grandkids. I don't have grandkids yet, but this is a goal for me, right? So I'm fighting for those things. Maybe you want to fight for, you know, golfing, right? I think you want to figure out what you are fighting for and just let the hammer dunking, let that, we don't have to have that one.
Marcus, or Henry, I should say, Marcus, Henry, I should say, it's been great talking with you today. I hope we have a chance to do this again. I loved your book and,
thank you.
I hope you sell a lot of copies. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I can tell you read it really carefully. Thank you so much. That means a lot.
Henry Abbott, our guest, his book, Ballistic, The New Science of Injury-Free Athletic Performance. It was great to have him with us, and I hope I get a chance to talk with him again. It was a lot of fun. Coming up, we're going to be talking about a bio blitz. You know what a bio blitz is? You're going to hear about that in just a couple of minutes. I'm Larry Mealer.